Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9 coming to you from our beautiful brand new studios. I'm here with a guest that I've had a number of times, Steve Lasker. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. You got some nice digs here now.
I know, right?
I don't know if you can tell. Well, I know you got a new background.
So we've had you on before about Docker, and now we're going to talk a little bit more about Docker. So why don't we just sort of summarize what we had before and what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Today. So there's a couple, we think of it as there's three major parts, right? There's the local development, where you're just building your containers. Then you build them in a CI and CD system and you deploy them to something like Azure Container Service. My team's been doing a bunch of work around that local development experience where we want to make sure that you kind of get a similar experience than when you're working on your machine with IIS Express. You're developing in a container because we don't think of containers as a deployment model, but you're actually running in a container. Mm-hmm. So over the last year, we've been doing a lot of work and iterating over that. We've done some recordings with you on our current work at the time, and we've been taking a lot of feedback, and now we have what we believe is a more balanced view of development and deployment images.
So if you're going to go back and look at the one that we did previously, that stuff is good for historical purposes, but this stuff is more what it is now.
Yeah. If you look, we often get feedback from people, well, it used to work this way. Why doesn't it work that way now? It's because we're listening to feedback and mm-hmm. we're making changes. So this is the what we call our 0.40 release that we've just shipped by the time this airs. And it takes a better balance on when you're developing, you have a certain set of priorities versus when you're deploying an image, you have a different. Like in development, I want to get that quick iterative loop. I want to be able to make changes and see it in my image, you know, as fast as possible.
Sure.
When you're deploying, you want the container to start up as fast as possible. Right? This isn't the day of VMs, right? We start containers instantly. We want to make sure that image is optimized for that. So. Mm-hmm. We use like the publish features of .NET to really get optimized images. So
today, are we going to focus on the sort of the type feedback, developer feedback loop, or are we going to focus on the deployment loop, or both?
Actually, we're going to focus on prepping for deployment. So we're going to do everything as a local inner loop here, and we'll focus on how you can develop with a single project, when you start adding services, you have a multi-container development, and then when you can actually add additional container definitions locally. So you'll see that kind of evolution.
So let's start with just sort of a quick overview of containers, why they're important, and then we'll dive into some things, maybe for those watching for the first time.
Yeah, so you know, with containers, the main thing what you're seeing is an evolution of DevOps. We've often struggled on how do we get that information sent from the local developer and hand it off to operations, and we've got the code and then the environment. So we're always trying to get to this continuous model. With containers, you're actually encapsulating the majority of the environment inside the thing you deploy.
I see.
So we're not deploying binaries anymore, DLLs. We're actually deploying an image which has the environment.
Yeah.
So the container model is just that, right? It's in a shipping container, there's people that just know how to drive a truck, you know, the containers from one place to another. They don't really care about the contents. And that's the model that we have with Docker containers. And then, you know, so now a developer has more control. And because you don't have to hand off all this information about, hey, by the way, did you install this service pack on that machine? Or if we remember this environment variable, now we can actually put all that in developers' hands and then ops can run images. That's the main goal.
And I imagine that if you're running a multi sort of project solution, each project may or may not live in its own container as well.
Correct. The way we think about containers is each container is a process.
I see.
So if you think of like ASP.NET projects, we might have the website, we might have some APIs, we might have some batch jobs, and we use like web jobs. And if you look at a lot of those were built with technologies that made it easier because the deployment was so difficult, right? Web jobs was easy because you just deployed it with your code.
Sure.
And where in containers, a lot of that has been, it's evolved. I like to make this analogy of like a Tesla car. You know, the Tesla car is really amazing now. It's a little expensive. I'm waiting for the one I could afford. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 10 years ago, the car companies were trying this. But all the components weren't really there, right? The lights drew too much power. The batteries weren't long enough. The motors, you know, weren't efficient. So all of these things had to come together. And now we get something that's possible. And I think of the same thing with Docker. We have containers that start up instantly, like in less than a second. So now you don't have to worry about warming something up and pre-deploying. We can build the environment in the, you know, development space. And then we have an efficient way to deploy them, because things with like image layering and Docker registries allow us to deploy deltas of the change, not the whole thing.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of pieces that come together that I think really unlock the potential of things we've been trying for many years.
All right, so should we dig in?
Why don't we get started? So what I have here is Visual Studio 2015. It's with our Docker Tools 0.40 release. And I'm just going to start with an ASP.NET web app. You notice I've named the web app the web, but I've created a different name for the solution. This will come in a few moments here. So I picked the web application template because I'll start with the front end. And this is ASP.NET 1.0, the RTM with the preview tooling. And we're doing the normal package restore. And just so far, there's nothing Docker special about this. But what I want to do is I want to actually develop this in a container. I don't want to actually have to think of it as deployment, because I want to take the benefits of that environment. So I'll say add Docker support. And we'll now add the artifacts into your project. And if you looked at our previous tools, you'll see a bit of an evolution, but we'll just focus on what we have here. We have a single Docker file now, and it defines our image. And this is a slightly pre-release day, so let me just fix this. So we've done ASP.NET Core. And once you get the tools, this will be what it puts in there by default. And what this image is it's one of these optimizations we've done. ASP.NET Core is really just .NET plus some additional NuGet packages.
Right.
But what we wanted to do was focus on that fast perf. So here we have pre-engined images for those packages.
Oh, I see.
So now our startup perf is faster. So I have that by default. That'll be in there by the time you start.
Now, for the Docker tooling that you have, is this like an MSI that they'll be able to download?
Yeah, if you go to the extension gallery, I'll show a link at the end.
Got it.
Down below, maybe.
Fantastic.
Where you can get the Docker tools for Visual Studio. So that's our Docker file, and that defines how our image gets built. And then we have a single release compose file. I'll talk about the other two in a second. And here is how you would deploy your one or more containers. Compose is a standard way for defining that collection. And in fact, here, the image name, I'm going to actually fully qualify this here. Docker tools and .azurecr.io. So this is defining the namespace by which this image will live. And we'll call this the multi-project. So you notice, and then slash. So now I've defined a fully qualified name for our image. It's kind of an image name and tag. But when I call Docker compose build, it will actually use the build definition here. And when it builds with the compose syntax, it will use that image name as the tag. So it automatically names our image for us.
I see.
So it's a nice, either way you come in.
So is the image the same thing as the container? Maybe my ignorance is showing.
Yeah, no, it's there's a whole vocabulary around Docker. So think of image is at rest. It's the definition. It's the template. Sits as a file.
Okay.
And a container is an instance.
I see. Okay.
So I could spin up, one, two, 1,000 different instances, containers from an image.
I see. So this image, is this a specific image that we've built for people to download?
Well, this is the one we've built as Microsoft, and we ship, which is an optimized ASP.NET Core image.
I see.
That's why it's in the from, right? So I'm going to define my image from this base image. Kind of think of inheritance. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird analogy. We'll come back to this stuff here. We set the working directory. We set up some environment variables to make sure it listens on port 80. I'll talk about the 5000 thing later. We copy the source in, and then we set the entry point. So that's a standard .NET kind of model, right? And then what we say is, when that image is being built, I want this to be the image name, right? Because I need to define my version of it. Mm-hmm. And then this is how it gets built, using the context is the location by which it's called, so all the files in that directory are sent.
See.
And then it's just saying, hey, by the way, use that Docker file we just pointed to.
And the name of the image is pretty much whatever we would like.
There's some conventions there
that
you have to do. The first part is your registry, so that's where I'm going to push this image.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have namespaces, that you can put things in. So you can put like a collection of images within this multi-project namespace.
I see.
It could be your warranty department or whatever. And the tag is just added later on. We'll see that that's a variable there. So now I've got the basics there, right? So now, if you notice, in addition to IIS Express, we have Docker there now as well. So we think of that as your deployment target. So when I hit F5 there, or click the button, we'll take that image, the from ASP.NET Core image that we had. And so let's just toggle over there. So we're making sure we have that. We actually had it cached locally. And we're going to build that image for the first time, putting, well, I'll talk about putting our content in there in a moment. But you'll see now we're launching it. So now it'll launch the default browser. I think I happen to have Chrome set up here. And we'll let, and if we looked, it's actually loading the debugger there as well. So now we are running this in a Docker container. And we'll drop in some information to show that here. But the point is that we are targeting that same developer experience. So if you look, now we'll see we've created this image here. That's the name that we just gave it.
Right.
And then we are inheriting from this Microsoft ASP.NET Core 101. All right. So now, if let's just stop this here. And I'm going to drop in some contents here just to
We're going to quick write code, right?
Yeah, we're going to do the quick coding. That's exactly it. So I'm just going to, let's see, views. Well, actually, let's not do that one yet. Let's do share it, actually. Well, let me make sure I have the right directory here. Yeah, demo assets controllers. Okay, well, we don't have that view, so we'll skip that part of the demo where I show about. No big deal. All right, so now we've got that, but we want to actually consume an API. That's actually, before I do that, let me get thrown off here. I wanted to show more about this release was the development and production.
Okay.
So let me start this one up again. Actually, what I'm going to do is start this under Control F5 so that we can see some iterative changes. So now, and Control F5 is kind of like what you would expect here, right? So it starts up really quick. I actually didn't attach the debugger, but I can make changes, right? So if I come over to the view and I go to home about, I can, you know, say, well, this is our Razor file change. And if I save that, and as soon as I go here, we can see that that change was applied. Now, it turns out that's kind of interesting how that works. It works here on Windows into a Linux container. And the way the Razor engine works is it, in the runtime itself, knows to do watching for file watching changes.
Like I see.
I notify file watcher. So when it sees me make a change, it goes, oh, let me go grab that view again. In the container world, you know, we're running Docker for Windows here. We actually have our files on our laptop, but the container is running separately. So we needed a way that the container can see our changes, and it just so happens that the file notifications get lost as it goes through the Windows to the Linux host. So the way we fixed this, I don't want to say the way we got around it, the way we fixed it was if we look at our additional compose file. So notice I have this, I have three different compose files. This is the one which you define your what you're going to deploy. At development time, we then pass an additional compose file. Docker has this ability to pass additional compose files, and it's like this overlay model.
Sure, it's like CSS, but for...
Exactly, for Docker compose, yes. So in here, what you see is this .NET use polling file watcher. That tells the Razor engine to just poll for changes. Because it's not getting notifications.
And this is only on debug, because I assume that it's going to be...
Yeah, you would think it's a little noisy, yeah. You know, but yes, it's only during development because, remember, the premise of a container is once you build the image, you never change it.
Correct.
So this is really just a development feature. So that's how we get that working there. Now, the next one you might want to change is your controller. And we'll stick something here, in here, and this is in here, in here. This is our C# file. And we're not going to see that even if we wait a really, really long time. The way we do this in IIS Express is we have .NET Watch, which people are probably kind of used to. And it's an additional NuGet package you can download for tooling. And it watches for C# changes. And if it sees it, it recompiles, kills the process that IIS Express is listening to, and restarts it.
I see.
We're not there yet.
Okay.
So what if I rebuild this manually, the process will get killed. And you'll notice that it just dies. What you can do as a temporary workaround is, we'll do this here. So let's take a look at our running containers. So we have our running container here, and you'll notice it's basically just running infinity because we attach the debugger on the fly. What I can do is do a, I'll do this, docker exec, and I have to get the container ID. And whoops, let's try that again. Docker exec. And we'll grab C02. Notice I don't need to do the whole thing, which is kind of cool. I only have to pass in enough that makes it unique. And so now my container is actually going to restart because I've started that process and I could see the C# file.
I see. So you have to restart it manually for now.
Yeah, it's just a temporary thing. We debated on what we're going to get done in this release before we get it out. This is one of the temporary workarounds. You can just hit Control F5 here. It just takes a little bit longer, and we haven't finished that up. But the thing I wanted to show also here is, let's look at the contents of that container. So we're in development mode now, right? We have the debug profile. And if I do a docker exec dash IT for interactive, and was it C02, and I call bash, if I list the contents, what I see is our project. In fact, if I do a create a file there and come back over, we'll notice we now have that text file that we just created. So, like, well, okay, so we've done something there. Let's come back out here. If I do a Docker inspect.
Oh, an extra D in there.
Docker D. What was the?
C02.
C02, thank you. If we look, what we'll see is the mounts. We see we got these three volume mounts in here. So we've actually mounted our source code into the container. That's the app directory. We've mounted the CLR debugger and the NuGet packages. So we've been experimenting quite a bit of, do we put the contents in? Do we copy it? Do we build in the container? And this has turned out to be the fastest thing that we found so far, is it gives us that balance of my code I can do on my development machine. I can access it from the container. I can make those changes. I don't have to put the packages in each time. Even with image layering caching, this turned out to be a much better model.
And so effectively, what you're doing is you're starting up this container, but you're mounting everything that may or may not cost a lot. Because I imagine copying all those files into the container and then executing them is going to take some time.
Right. And our focus during development is fast iteration. Yeah. That's the, and we said we could have a fatter image. Turns out we didn't really need it. Yeah. In fact, if you look at this, the image that we're inheriting from, it's the same because this is the image we're using and this is the image it came from. Mm-hmm. It's the same size because we didn't put anything in it yet.
Yeah.
That's that image. But now let's switch over to release mode and we'll see the difference here. If I build this image, what it's going to do is use that same Docker file, but we're using the release definition in addition to the compose. And the only thing we're overriding here is adding a volume mount for the debugger so you can debug this if you want, as good as you can debug release images. But the base image is now ready to be published. So let's go take a look at this now. And we see we have a latest for not dev, but latest. And notice it is a bit bigger. And in fact, I meant to run this here. So we'll just spin this up. And once it gets instanced, we can actually do an exec into it again. And we'll see the contents are actually different. We can also do the inspect again. So Docker PS, and that is, did it finish?
Nope, not yet.
It's still attached in the debugger. So this is there is some additional perf work that we are working on. So this will get better. So now I can do that Docker exec. We'll just scroll up here. Actually, it's Docker EF2. And notice our volume mounts are limited to the debugger, right? So it's just the debuggers all went into it.
And everything else has been pushed over into the image.
Right, EF2. So now if we do Docker exec dash IT for interactive, and we'll do a bash session. Now if we list, we can see a little bit more.
Yeah.
So this is our published output. So this is the optimized, all the binaries and the content. So I can do into the dub root and see what's in there, and so on and so forth. So you're seeing that during development, we want one image type, and release, we want the image that we want to deploy. So we've kind of worked out those two balances there. And you know, then we've got our page running and so forth.
And that's an interesting dichotomy, right? Because there's a deliberate decision to do mounting and development time, but not a release time, which makes sense. Because it really doesn't matter. Just because you're in the same environment, it's the environment that matters, and that's what Docker gives to you. But the files can sort of be anywhere at that time.
Yeah, and with remember, because of development, we didn't actually copy the contents, and so right. The image is useless. In the release, we've actually given you a real image. So it takes a little bit longer, but you want that fast startup, and of course you need the content in your image. So so that's all good. We've got that working. The next thing is we wanted to show how to consume other services. So let's take a look here, and let's see. These files I know I do have. So I've got another controller here. Demos, multi-project, source, web, and we'll drop them in here. So we'll copy them in there.
Yeah, you don't want to hose your demo for
that's later. How I lost the other file apparently. So we'll ignore that one, but that's okay. We have another one. We'll show that. And the views let's come back over here to views, and we'll pop the Magic 8 Ball. And I'm actually going to replace the shared ones so that we can. And of course,
you did it again, buddy.
I did it again, but that's okay. All right. So now, if I run this again. We'll see that we put a view in here, a controller rather. We'll start with the controller. And it's going to make an API call. And the view for the Magic 8 Ball here will just display information around a Magic 8 Ball, right? Not too much.
So is it still doing the release, or it's debug now? So.
I did switch it over back to debug because we want to actually set some breakpoints, go through this, and see the experience working. So one of the reasons I dropped in the shared is I get the additional link here. And as I click on that, we'll see it's thinking about it. And we now can see that the visualizations came up. And looks like I've kind of forgot an image. So we can go back and fix that. Mm-hmm. Let's go take a look here. So we'll come over. And this, again, kind of shows we've got our image there. And you would think that I can just right drag it over and drop it in here. But of course, VS is going to say, no, I'm kind of busy right now. I'm not going to let you do that. But that's OK. We will drop it in here. And because we're volume mounted, poof. We get our 8 ball.
So that's nice.
Just kind of simple, right? We're starting off really simple. We show the razor change, but now we got to figure out, well, why isn't this thing actually giving us any answers? Because clearly we want something more than the picture as the answer. If we come over to, let's just close this up, the Magic 8 Ball controller, and we step through this, let's just click there, and we'll go full screen. We'll step in, and we'll see that we're getting a request. We try to process that request, and it's kind of going exception. Now, if we look at the address, it's kind of an interesting URL, right? So what exactly would that URL be? Because there's nothing running right now that has that qualified name. So, all right, well, let's kind of think about that. When you're doing this, and I hate to get in the word of microservices, because it's always like this
overloaded word.
Yeah. Yes. But if you have multiple services running, regardless of what label you want to put on them, there's this concept of service discovery. Like, how do I find it? Well, if I'm using Docker Compose, they've actually got service discovery built in. So let's take a look at how we can take advantage of that. So what I'm going to do is I want to add a reference to this service. Now, before I jump in too deep, if I was doing a reference in a regular .NET project and somebody else compiled the code, you would do the reference, add reference, and you'd browse around for some DLL that they might have given you. Now, you could also reference a running services too, but I want to make a little bit of analogy here. So at this point, what I want to do is I want to get that other image available to me here. So I'm going to do is, let's just say API is the name of the service, and I'm going to give it the name of the image that I want it to spin up.
And it looks like there's some IntelliSense with the...
And it looks like that, but that's not really it yet.
Well, we're working on it, all right?
We are working on it. You'll notice it's all red, and we have some autocomplete and IntelliSense in the Visual Studio Code extension, and we've gone back and forth. We have some for the Docker file, you'll notice, in this 0.4 release. We're starting to see some colorization. We want to get the compose. We're kind of stuck in a little bit of a model of right now doing VS Code and VS are different. We're working to resolve that so we can actually develop a language service once and work on both.
Sure.
So we'll get that coming. So for now, we resort to copy and paste. It's a great autocomplete feature.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably the safest. So if you notice, I have this API image that I've available here. So I'm just going to go grab that one. And I'm going to pop it in here. So by doing that, what I'm doing is I'm telling Visual Studio and Docker that when I spin up this compose file, instance this image as well. So let's take a look at what we have run. Let's clear this, just make some room here. We have one container running right now, our web front end, right? And it's the dev one. When I spin this up this time, what's going to happen is I'm effectively doing that binary reference to an image. So that's why I'm trying to just make that analogy to mentally map to it. Somebody's already built the image. I don't really know what technology is in it. Could be Go, could be Python, could be
Node, something.
Anything, Haskell, who knows, who cares? Because that's the beauty of an image. It's not a .NET DLL, it's a container image. So now when this spins up, what I can do is, because it was defined here with API as the service name, is Docker has created a network in their network overlay to give discovery within that collection of the compose file. So do I still have my breakpoint? Let's take a look here. Yeah, we do.
Yes, you do.
So we'll click on magic here. And when it steps through it, this time, let's get a full screen here. We should, if life is good,
and you did
get it, because that API is now available. Because it's spun up, it's the local network within that virtual environment. Virtual is another overloaded word. And now, if we just complete that, we'll see we've got an answer. And you might wonder, like, I didn't type in a question, but
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
No, it's
does
a
it?
Fault.
I thought I was like all ranting on this last night. Oh, maybe I should hook that up.
No,
it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
So I hate to expose the secrets of Magic 8-Ball.
If you're watching this, remember, Magic 8-Ball really does work. So the question I have for you is, when you're, because I'm like old school, and when I put an API, when I put a URL in there, I'm expecting it to go to that URL. How did it know that API / whatever it is that you did, how did it know that it needs to live in that same environment and not go and do some DNS lookup for API?
Yeah, exactly. So if we look here, let's look here. So now we see we've got two images running. And let's just take a look at Docker inspect. We'll just grab the web AA5. And in here, we're going to see some networks that are available to us. There's some labels, there's environment, there's our mounts. Where's our network definitions?
I saw it kind of at the bottom. There was some.
Did I miss it altogether? I haven't looked for this one.
There,
oh, here we go.
Settings.
Network. Thank you. So this is where we're set up for the network and trying to discover the other containers. So Docker sets up this private network, and then they're linked to each other. And if I spin up another compose, unless I've done an additional step, those are not available to others. And there's an important aspect of this that I want, because there's a lot of things about Docker that you kind of have to get your head wrapped around. What we did is we exposed port 80. And we even told Kestrel to listen on port 80. If you don't do this, Kestrel says, well, I don't want to listen to anything because I want to be secure by default. Yeah. Now, you also wonder, wasn't it 5,000 instead of 80? And this is another place that we debated quite a bit. On the machine, when you're running IIS Express or Windows Server, we know that port 80 might be used up by somebody. So Node uses 3,000. We went off and said, well, we'll do 5,000 because we're 40% better or something. I don't
sure.
know. When we look at the Docker world, the container itself has a port, and then it can get exposed publicly. So it's not until it gets exposed publicly that it conflicts with what's running on the machine, because it's this private network setup where it can run on whatever port. So what we did is we decided not to bring that baggage, that problem, into Docker. And we wanted to just have port 80 there, and then you can expose it as you want. But if we look at the compose file, notice that we only said port 80 once. There's not the left side. What that does is it tells Docker, expose port 80 on the container itself, but dynamically grab a port on the host. So if we look in our browser.
It's like 32.780.
Yeah. And what's nice about that is it will dynamically figure out what port on the fly is available. Instead of like hard coding a port, and then I put it on your machine through source control, and you're like, I'm already using that port for something else. So those are some of the things that we've worked around to solve some of those problems.
So again, how does it know that http://API is the right place to go?
I didn't answer that question, did I?
No. That's why I'm asking again, just in case.
I'm sorry. Thank you for keeping me on track. So I got focused on the ports. That right there is the URL. This service is now running under that network. When API is defined on that private network, I just spent minutes defining there, that's the service discovery. That's where it says, if I look in my code, right, in my code for the Magic 8-Ball controller. Where did I put that?
There it is.
Oh, there, right. I said the base, and then I put the sub URL there. So that's how it finds that additional image.
So the API is that image, and then Magic 8-Ball is probably the controller.
Inside that code. And you know, I can show that project. I'm not sure how we're doing on time here, but that's the next step.
But the thing is like that could be anything. It could be some, I don't know, some Django application. Or
Python. There's nothing in there that says it's, you know, .NET Core Web API. It happened to be written with that. There's some other demos that I do. I call a polyglot demo where I do a Node front end and a .NET Core mid-tier. And that's the beauty of Docker, is that not only do I get separation of environments from a coding perspective, and I'm dependent on one version of a framework, you might be dependent on another, but I can run entirely different stacks, side by side. These are running on the same host, so that's one of the core.
So we'll leave it as a mystery what's in there.
Well, you want to show it, or we?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can. Yeah, we can. Whatever.
Let's do that. So here, now this is also a place where we're going to venture into some work that I can do in tooling, but you can see an opportunity what's going to get better. So what I want to do is add another project. Right, so we're going to add a new project. We'll call that, but I'm actually going to put it under the source directory because I want it to be side by side with web. And I'll call this the API. We'll choose the web API template. And now we've got our API project here as well. So we've now developed them side by side. They each have their own, they will have their own compose file in a moment here. So we'll let that finish restoring. This is restoring the NuGet packages for it. And then we can say add Docker support, and now we've got the same thing here. So let me just fix this, right, because we've just got a ASP.NET Core 1.0.1. And we will add an image here. dockertools.azurecr.io/multi-project. Okay? So if I set this as my startup, we can now start this one up, and it will do the give us the values controller. So it's going to first build that image. It'll build us that dev image first. And we can then, and then it'll just launch that for us. So we'll see that firing up there and debuggers attaching.
So this is nice. Now you're focusing on development of the API side when you're leaving the website alone. And it looks like it's doing the right thing.
Right, so it's got its standard values controller in there. And we'll say, no, we don't want that. So now if I want to, let's just drag in some more files here. And we'll drag in our API files. And we have our controller. And we have our Magic Web API controller.
Oh, now it's running.
Yeah, it's running. Let's stop that. And I think that's all I need from that one. Oh, no, the models. Because we need our actual answers. Right? It's the secret.
Yeah.
Shh. Yeah. Yeah. We'll let that hide. So let's take a look at what we have here. So we are, again, expose port 80, because we can actually run these both on port 80 because they're internal to their network. It's their IP, their network, and then they get on the host, they get routed externally to, so I can browse to them. Let's see, what else? So we've got that, I put that in there. So now if I run this again, because I've just dropped those files in there for the new controller.
You should be able to go to Magic 8-Ball.
Right. And one of the things I did is I pulled off /API because, I don't know, I find that a kind of a, I don't need that convention. This whole thing is my API because it runs in a separate process. It's not running next to my views. So I can say Magic 8-Ball. And lo and behold, I ask it questions with my keyboard of F5, and life is good. So that's how I built it individually. So now I've got my local one, but now I really want to test them together. This is where we have hidden one of the limits of where we're at right now, and I'll show you where we're going. But right now, these are completely separate projects. They have their separate compose files. You hit F5 on individually on each one. One of the ways that you can do this is here, what I can do is reference the web project just like I did with the, here where I referenced the API project.
Right.
So I'm going to come over here and we'll grab this image name. And I'm going to pop it, whoops, just once.
And web, right?
Web, because that's the name of the service. And we'll get rid of the tag here because we just want latest. And now when we, I have to build the release version of this, by the way, because remember, this is the release one. So let's stop this. We'll switch over to release. And now when I rebuild, so this is kind of why I wanted to make that binary analogy. You have to build the DLL.
Right.
I'm building the release version of the image. And Docker images. And we'll see that API, there's web latest. There we go.
Yep.
All right, so we're good. So now we've got this. Let me switch back over to debug. And actually, I meant to show this. You can actually change the startup project too, but we'll come back to that.
So this effectively is going to do what we did last time, but in reverse.
In reverse.
But with the actual image that we built from web.
And this time, I can debug the API.
Right.
You want to be able to debug them both. That's probably one of the next questions everybody's going, mm-hmm. Well, how could I debug them both? And you can't yet. We're working on it. I'll show you some thoughts that we're thinking there. So now, well, first of all, if we say Magic 8-Ball, right, we still got that there. If I go to the root, I'm actually not going to find anything because what did I actually expose it? I don't think I exposed it. So this is, yeah. So this is a good example here. So in this compose file, if you notice, I said this image, but I didn't tell it any public ports to start listening on. So what I'm going to do is say, 80 to expose publicly, and 80 for internal. And so now what this says is, no, I actually don't want to use a dynamic port. I could, but then I have to go figure it out, and this is where our tooling would come up. So let's restart this. I actually could have hit Control F5, but we'll use the debugger again.
And so this effectively is saying, now for this particular project, 80 internally, but please forward 80 externally.
80 externally, so I can access it outside of the Docker network.
Got it.
So we'll let that fire up. And this would be a great way if my front end was written again in some other stack that I don't have access to its source code. Mm-hmm. It's no problem. I just reference it here.
Oh, oops.
I hit something. Yeah. Well, that's good, because let's do this. What I want to do is show the startup here. So if I go to debug on the API project, you notice it says API values. And if we also notice there's a service port definition there. That's how we're picking up that dynamic service port that got allocated, mm-hmm. Docker PS. If we look closely, where is it? There it is.
There it is.
32768 maps to 80. Ignore this 5000, that will go away. What this is saying is that port was exposed and Docker dynamically allocated that one. And here it didn't, and that's why, well actually it did. So we just redid it. And that right there shows 80, the mapping 8080. So let's go and set our startup project to get rid of the dynamic port. And we will, let's just Control F5 for a little more speed.
And now this will actually go to the web image by default.
Correct. So there's our web image. Let's kind of make that a little more realistic. And now when I call it, now I'm linking up both.
I see.
So then I can set my breakpoint and walk through my API code as well. So that's, you know, pretty cool of how you can work them two together. And I could reverse that back, right? I could just as easily switch over here and map the other image. So you could kind of go back and forth. What we really want is to get those linked together, and that is one of the next things that we'll work on.
Is there going to be some global YAML file for Compose?
Let's see. I think this is the one. So this is like mockups, right? Nice. So one of the things that we have been talking about is how should this all be stitched together? Right. Should it be a deployment project, which is like
another project?
Yeah, yet another project. There's a love-hate relationship with deployment projects. In addition to the fact that there's this love-hate passion, are they too overweight? From a Compose Docker model, we think of the Compose file being above the project.
Of course.
And in a deployment project, it's up here and it sits alongside. So it makes the experience kind of weird. So what we're hoping to do, and you know, there's a lot of great extensibility in Visual Studio. This is one that we haven't quite figured out how we're going to do yet. But basically, we want the Compose files to be at the root. And then you have your Docker files in your project. So the Docker file gets built within each project, and each one's an image, assuming you want mm-hmm. that. And then the Compose file would stitch up all of those. So here's our release. Then you see the debug, where we've got the additional overlays we've done for each one. So that's where we're kind of thinking we want to go. But I don't want people to get blocked. That's why I wanted to show this a little more advanced scenario of how you run multiple at the same time.
So that's pretty interesting. So I'm assuming you want some feedback from people about what this experience looks like for multiple projects. Because I can see, like as a dev, right, I'm going to start working on the thing at the bottom, and then it's like, oh, now we have to do the thing at the top, and what is that going to look like?
Right, and how can I step across those, or how can I work as a team? So we want to enable people that are working separately, the binary reference model, but we also want to support people that, no, I'm actually building both of them at the same time, and I want to step across both of those. So we'll definitely work more on this. The things that, so you talk about feedback, well, let's just kind of pop up here to a couple of final slides. So we have Docker tools for Visual Studio. That's what we just showed.
Right.
This will be version 0.4.0 that we just referred to today. We have Visual Studio Code tools as well, and we use a Yeoman generator as well as our Docker tools extension. And that's the Yo Docker stuff. But we what we showed here today was the bottom link here for ASP.NET Core multi-project. There's a bunch of other links. So all these projects, there's references in those to be able to provide us feedback.
Sure.
Of course, you can just contact me directly. I'd love to get the feedback and figure out what we should do to what pains you guys are having. Probably one of the things that's also worth referencing is, you know, with Ignite coming up or past, depending on where you're watching this, is we've been focusing on Linux containers in our tooling because it's available. It's, you know, it's been released for a while. It gives us a target for how to model this. And we are doing Windows tooling as well. So right now we are targeting Linux. In subsequent versions of our tooling, you'll be able to do Windows containers as well.
With NanoServer?
With both, well, yes, yes and no. Full framework, so .NET full framework, that will be Windows Server.
Okay.
If you're targeting .NET Core, it'll be NanoServer. Because .NET Core is this really nice, small, optimized, you know, runtime. We want to put it on the cloud-optimized image of NanoServer. It's not that you can't run .NET Core on server, but why? So we'll have Nano support, and we'll have Windows Server support for full framework apps as well.
Well, awesome. I was going to ask you, where can people go to find out more? Where can they download the thing?
There you go.
And then where can they get these projects? Looks like you got it all set up there. Thanks so much, my friend.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I really appreciate the time to get out and talk to you guys.
Well, we have been talking all about Docker tools in Visual Studio. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Steve Lasker. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thanks.